Welcome in to the Blanket Coverage Podcast. Today is Friday, April the 23rd, and we have another exit interview for you. Today is the NFC East. We're going to talk about the worst division in football last year. It's certainly a fun division, I think, to talk about because you got so much that you can rag on from all sides here. It's a really fascinating division as you look at the outlook for next year. But first, we have some big news in the NFL. There was a big trade today as we sit 6 days from the start of the NFL draft. And the Kansas City Chiefs finally get their Patrick Mahomes insurance policy. They will most likely look to pair Orlando Brown or slide Orlando Brown in at left tackle for a very long time. And this is now a revamped KC offensive line. But what did it take for them to get Orlando Brown at their left tackle position?
Well, to get this trade, it didn't take as much as I probably would have thought for a solid guy. Again, Brown did want out of here. Yeah, but Brown did want out. So I'm sure that on at least Brown's end, it didn't really take a lot to get him out and over to Kansas City. But yeah, with
Brown
this,
had the leverage there.
Yeah, no, 100%. And the Chiefs traded their 2021 first round pick, which is number 31 overall. So not an extremely valuable first round pick, but first round nonetheless. A third rounder, which will be the 94th, and a fourth rounder, the 136th, and then also traded a 2022 for fifth round selection, which is obviously not too big, but an overall good collection of picks. And they got in return, of course, Brown, but they also got a 2021 second round pick, number 58th. And that's been a lot of point of contention here. It's talking about how they got a second round pick and Brown out of this is pretty big. They also got a 2022 sixth round pick, which you can basically flip that for the fifth round. Those are so far away and down the list, those don't really matter. So 27 draft spots down for Kansas City, giving up a couple mid-round picks, but you also fill the biggest hole. So right. If you're Kansas City, I would be feeling great right now.
Yeah, I mean, this was the biggest need for them in the offseason. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to know if you watched the Super Bowl that they needed help on the offensive line. And certainly Orlando Brown is a good fit there, I believe. And I think he's going to be in a Chiefs uniform for a long, long time at this point. I would like to point out one thing. And that's that this is another fallout scenario from the Laramie Tunsil gas mask incident.
It really goes back to that, doesn't it?
It really goes back to that. We've had so much happen this offseason that's connected to the Laramie Tunsil incident. Well, guess who got drafted to the Ravens because Laramie Tunsil slid, essentially? Ronnie Stanley.
Mm-hmm.
And why does Orlando Brown want out of Baltimore? Because Ronnie Stanley is their left tackle and he doesn't want to play right tackle. Another result of the Laramie Tunsil gas mask incident. It's going to be like OJ running for like 2000 or OJ being drafted by the Buffalo Bills. You realize if OJ isn't drafted by the Buffalo Bills that the Kardashians like aren't famous.
Yeah, it's kind of like that meme where you see like the really tiny domino, like the regular size domino, and then at the end it's like a wall verbal collapsing. Meme. So like, yeah, it's the verbal meme, you know, a tiny domino to the giant wall, and it works. It eventually knocks it down. So, yeah, this is pretty big right up here. Brown will probably be a franchise tag option if he isn't locked up anyway. It seems pretty obvious that they're going to be investing in him very clear. Joe Thuney was on a massive 5-year, $80 million deal. Former Pro Bowl guard Kyle Long was coming back after 1 year retirement. So it's been big for the Chiefs. They need to get that line back up. Of course, Lucas Niang, who opted out last season, the former TCU player, will be back.
Duvernay-Tardif will probably be the right tackle. So this is a group
rebuilding.
With five new starters from the start of the 2020 season.
Chiefs weren't playing.
Look, if there's one thing that we've seen over the last couple of years, it's that the Chiefs will do anything to protect their $500 million investment at quarterback, whether that's
they better
whether that's rebuilding the entire offensive line, whether that's getting new weapons in, they will do anything to protect their $500 million investment. And that's smart. It's good to see a smart front office figuring out how to sort of manipulate the cap. I mean, I think any front office, save for maybe a couple, maybe like Jacksonville with Tom Coughlin at the helm a couple of years ago, I think any front office in the NFL could do a pretty half decent job as long as they had Patrick Mahomes in the building. I think that makes your job a lot easier as a general manager when you can just check that one off.
And I think that's a great point on that end as well. A couple other points to bring about in our general sort of NFL update news. Washington, who we're about to talk about pretty soon, waive running back Bryce Love, Heisman runner-up in 2017 for Stanford, kind of their next big coming of running back after a few years after Christian McCaffrey drafted. Returned in 2018 and then tore his ACL, which is really, really awful to see that. A really incredible player came back to help his team again and then gets hurt. And that's the number one reason, besides maybe just getting extra money, that why a player would want to go ahead and leave early. He was then selected in the fourth round, and he actually never did play a down. So really sad news for a player that really had just an unbelievable amount of potential, and it just
didn't an unbelievable college career. I remember he was a Heisman finalist. That was, I believe, the 2017 Alamo Bowl between TCU and Stanford.
That was late December. I remember that game.
That would be the 2016 Alamo Bowl, wouldn't it?
Because it was January.
What I'm saying, if it's in December, it would be the 2016 Alamo Bowl.
This is the relevant. We played TCU played Stanford in the 2017 season Alamo Bowl. I remember that. That was our freshman year.
Oh, you're correct.
Because the year before that was, I think, the Oregon game. So that was
the Liberty Bowl against Georgia.
That's right. Then Oregon was before. Yeah. Okay. I'm mixing it up. That is correct. Either way, he was still great for them. Was really great watching him play. But this may be the end of his career. Lastly, the league is then officially announcing their full schedule on May 12th, 2 weeks after the draft, which is pretty funny to me that they are scheduling a time to release the schedule. So
yeah,
it's money.
I always crack up at the NFL, like revealing their schedule. Like it's some big, like it's the World Cup draw or something. Like, no, these teams play each other every year. We already know who's playing who. It's just when they play them. I don't see why we have to have a big reveal for all this, but
there are no rankings in the NFL. It's like, who doesn't even matter when you play them anyway.
And the one talking point that it really leads to is like, who got way too many primetime games and who got screwed over like the Titans did last year.
And we'll see what they'll happen with. I only know that my Falcons should be on about zero of them. So
there's a guarantee that we're going to get like six Big Ben noodle arm games in prime time.
It's the Steelers.
The NFL
Cowboys are going to get at least six games.
But the Cowboys are justifiable. Why do the Steelers get eight primetime games a year? I get it. They've won a lot of Super Bowls, but Big Ben sucks now. I don't want to watch Big Ben slog around in the backfield for 2.5 hours on primetime every week.
Yeah, it's interesting how they schedule those out in terms of not really it's not really who's good, it's more who was good. And
I better see the Bills in prime time. I better see the Bills in at least four primetime games.
They'd have to be. I'd be surprised if they weren't.
Can't wait for that this season. But let's get in to what we were planning to talk about today, which is the NFC East, objectively the worst division in football last year. Because the division winners, the Washington football team, made the playoffs at 7-9. 7-9, Jack. Made the playoffs. One of the worst teams to ever make the playoffs. And they did it on the backs of their defense because this offense was terrible. And they still managed to make the playoffs and really give the Bucs a run for their money with Taylor Heineke at the helm.
Yeah, this was a team that I know we ragged on the NFC East a lot, which was pretty justifiable. But there was actually a lot about the Washington football team that really, really was impressive. They were predicted 29th. Offensive line finished 6th. Alex Smith, comeback player of the year. Chase Young, defensive rookie of the year. Defensive line ranked 5th overall. There were a lot of genuinely really incredible strengths in this team. And now, yes, I also understand that with Alex Smith's retirement, you're going to have to get around with player with quarterback. And again, he wasn't really elite, of course, in that last season. But there were a lot of really, really big positives to look at for a team that nobody thought. I mean, I couldn't have imagined, oh, yeah, the Washington football team is going to win the division. And again, I know it was a joke division, but they still won it. I mean, they still got the banner. They still were the best of the worst, which is still being the best of something. So big for them there. Worst moments for them, pretty obviously, were losing record. They also were a bottom 17 in passing and rushing yards and points. They were also 29th in points against. So it's, yeah, there were a lot of issues with this team. 90% of them were on the offensive side of the ball, which we'll get to. But overall, just a weird season, because if you're 7-9, you don't like that. But it's also like one of the first years in a really big rebuild of what they're going to have. But the biggest difference Washington has in a lot of teams around the league that are also similarly not very great is they have a very good foundation and a very good young foundation. And I think that's going to help build this team up in the coming years.
Right. This defensive line was absolutely outrageous last year. I believe they were 5th in the league in pressure rate as a team. And then you have Jonathan Allen and Chase Young both coming in at 7th. Around a 20% pressure rate from the defensive tackle position for Allen and the edge rush spot for Chase Young. So Chase Young comes into the league and he's an immediate impact rusher. And then you've got all along that line, you've got Daron Payne, Jonathan Allen, Montez Sweat. And this is just a good front seven, very solid. There is no reason to change anything along the defensive line. Really, there's not a lot of reason to change anything along the defense unless you're just adding talent, because this is a defense that was top 10 easily in the league. And in a lot of stats, they were top 5. I know they were top 5 in opponent time of possession. This is a defense that played really, really well and even scored points. I believe they're 3rd in the league in expected points from the defense. So, by that nature, they made up a lot of ground for the inefficiencies on offense, because this quarterback position, while utmost respect for Alex Smith and the fact that he got back out there and did it and came back and overcame all that he had to go through with that leg injury, this was a revolving door all year between Dwayne Haskins and Alex Smith coming off of almost losing his leg. And this team still made the playoffs.
And you never, ever, ever, ever want to have a revolving door with Dwayne Haskins coming in and out of there, as we got proved very solidly this season.
Correct. And now he's in Pittsburgh. So we'll see what's good there. I am not expecting Dwayne Haskins to be a starter in the NFL, at least a consistent starter in the NFL, really at any point in his career, unless his career takes a big turn. But let's turn to this Washington roster, take a look at some positions. Like we said, the D-line is loaded. This was actually the 6th ranked offensive line in the league per Pro Football Focus, despite them having 4 no names around Brandon Scherff, which Brandon Scherff had an outstanding year last year. So maybe some offensive line improvement, but really I think you need weapons if you're the football team. At running back, Antonio Gibson played really well last year. A nice versatile chess piece.
On my fantasy team. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Watch him down.
A big Thanksgiving day from Antonio Gibson. If you remember that, I believe he had 4 touchdowns.
Beautiful. Loved it.
Very versatile chess piece. He was a receiver at Memphis and now a running back in the NFL. He can play all over the field. So I like him as a piece there. And then honorable mention, you put tight end on here. Take me through that.
I really like what Logan Thomas had to bring off of here. I know his pro football rating wasn't extremely high, but I think Logan Thomas really came through later in the season and was able to offer a lot for this football team. Showed a lot.
Former Virginia Tech quarterback Logan Thomas.
It's a weird history, yeah.
Weird history. So let's figure out now where this team needs to get better. Okay. Taylor Heinicke is supposedly the starting quarterback for 2021. And with this defense, I don't know if that's a great option. But I don't know what else they're really going to do here at quarterback. I mean, they had their opportunity to go out and sign some guys, but I don't think you want to bring Mitch Trubisky into this quarterback room.
No.
I don't think any of the guys who are on the market are really a good fit in Washington. So, I mean, do you think they take, obviously they're probably going to take a quarterback at some point in the draft, but do you think that's like a high value pick, maybe a potential starter sometime down the line here, potentially this season or next year? Or do you think that they hold on, see what they have in Taylor Heinicke while they build the roster around him and build a roster that then you can just slide a quarterback into the next year?
I would say that you can hold off on that or take one later, like a Mond or a Trask. And the reason why I would wait is because you have the 19th overall pick and all of the top quarterbacks are going to be gone by then. And if you're going to go for a bigger guy in this draft, you're going to go for someone that's going to help out some other holes you need somewhere, like wide receiver. Terry is fantastic here. He had a great season, Terry McLaurin, but that's kind of it. You need a lot more help than that. It'd be great to get some other options. Again, Logan Thomas is solid too, but you need more options desperately. This team is also not particularly great at cornerback either. I know this defense is very good, but that is a spot for them to help fix. And again, I doubt they're going to take that very early, but Kendall Fuller's Jimmy Moreland, again, they're not super, super high ranked, so they need to have someone else out here that could be helpful as well. So there are a few points that they could sort of help out on that end as well. I also had linebacker as well. There is possibility they could help fill that in. I'm not entirely sure that if you remember, if Levante David did end up re-signing, because that will matter very much if he did.
He Levante did not. David plays in Tampa Bay.
Then they're thinking about, sorry, I was reading an article that was saying about him coming there. That's what it was saying. They're saying he could have been one that wasn't brought back, and they're saying Washington should target him, but that doesn't make any sense anymore. Sorry.
Right now on the roster, it's John Bostic and Josh Harvey Clemens, but really I think they're only playing – they play a lot of different personnel packages, and I believe they're around 4-3.
Yeah, so there's a possibility that they could help some little help there. So that's an option as well. So there's just a few pieces.
One
but,
more linebacker.
Yeah, that's why I was looking at Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah from Notre Dame would fall in right at that spot. So there are a few guys around here that go for it. I just don't think that would be smart to go for a quarterback now because they just don't have the pick for it. And it's kind of annoying almost because if you're Washington, you arguably could have been a worse team and got your quarterback ready because if this team got a quarterback that was that really solid, like a top five kind of quarterback, this team could be legitimately dangerous next year. But they're just not going to get that. So it's like if you're not going to get that, I'd rather go ahead and move on to the next thing.
Yeah, I think they're a dark horse trade up candidate. Should one of these top five quarterbacks start to slide, if you start to see a Mac Jones slide, and we're getting towards that 15th overall pick where the Patriots, you know, the Patriots want to take a quarterback.
I've seen rumors of the Falcons talking with the world of Washington about this. It's possible.
It's a poorly kept secret that the Patriots want a quarterback. So, I mean, if Mac Jones makes it past the Broncos at 9 and then starts to slide a little bit, I think you could see the Washington football team make a very aggressive offer to try to get out ahead of New Orleans and catch him. And same thing goes with Trey Lance. I think Trey Lance would be a perfect fit with this team. He could sit a little bit behind Taylor Heinicke while they figure out what they have for the first part of the year, while he gets used to the NFL game speed and just the NFL game in general. But either of those guys, if they start to fall, I think they would be a good fit in Washington, maybe less so Mac Jones. I'm just not the biggest Mac Jones guy. I don't get the hype.
Yeah, it's been kind of tough to see that as well, but it's difficult to see how much that's going to translate
Yeah, okay, sure. You had he had like the highest completion percentage in college football history. That's fine. He also played on one of the best offenses in college football history, and they were the best team on the field in every single game. And you can say that about Trevor Lawrence too, but I think that offense ran through Trevor Lawrence a little bit more so than Mac Jones. Yeah. The thing you hear about Mac Jones is that he is a quick decision maker and he's very smart. So you're not going to have to worry about the learning curve as far as learning the plays, et cetera, et cetera. But I just don't see the arm talent there, and I don't see the ceiling the same way I do with a guy like Justin Fields. I think Justin Fields' ceiling is very high. I think it's going to take a couple of years for him to adjust to the NFL. I think it's going to take a little bit longer than a guy like Deshaun Watson. But I think the talent's all there. Anyway, that's enough quarterback talk. Any other notes, any other guys you like for this team?
That's about most of the guys I got. Wide receiver Dyami Brown and Tylan Wallace from UNC and Oklahoma State. Those two guys I think could be great at wide receiver here. So just a couple options there, but that is mostly it. But we can move on to the big blue New York Giants. The Kings of New York, which is not saying a lot.
Giants.
Kings in New York is not saying a lot, at least when we're talking about football. And by New York, of course, I mean New Jersey, because they are still located in New Jersey, and Buffalo are the actual New York team that runs New York. So they're the other blue New York slash Jersey team.
That's a fact. I didn't even think about that. Buffalo is the team of New York.
Yeah, so we run New Jersey slash the metropolitan area of New York City. So
which is,
there you go, Giants.
Still more people than the rest of the state combined, if I'm not wrong.
By the rest of the probably whole region combined, I think you could probably add it up. But yeah, New York Giants finished a pretty meager 6-10 record, second in the division, did not make the playoffs, but Saquon getting hurt killed the season. And there are a lot of other points about this that were not great, but Saquon getting hurt killed it. Him and both Christian McCaffrey, we talked about how they're both were very young, very solid running backs, the future of the league, both getting hurt this year after really neither suffering a lot of injury beforehand. And that was really the big killer here. Missed the playoffs again here. Not pretty great. 31st ranked O-line. So you want to talk about bad O-lines? Well, we can talk about bad O-lines because this team is about as bad as you can get. Only 280 points scored over the entire season, which is worst in the division, which 280 over a 16-game season. I mean, my goodness. And then also beating the Seahawks is about the only positive thing I really can take away from it, which is really funny that this team beat the Seahawks. I don't know how that happened, but I just think it's hilarious that the Giants with this offense they have somehow outscored Seattle is kind of amazing to see. Looking at your safe positions here, running back is a million degrees the safe position. Not even a question. Saquon very obviously is the running back this team will do nothing to get rid of. That's very clear. Defensive line is actually pretty solid for this team. The interior here actually outpaced edge rushers and quarterback pressures, which I don't even know how that could happen. But the interior D-line is actually pretty decent for New York. May need some help on the pass rushers, but D-line interior pretty solid. Also at cornerback, Bradbury had a pretty strangely solid breakout season after middling with Carolina for years. So a very good year for him too. This roster is going to need a lot of help with sort of how they function, but that's at least some positive points there. And then Lee's safe interior offensive line is very bad. I mean, the whole offensive line is bad, but the tackles weren't particularly awful. So it's that's at least a better part. Wide receiver, there's not a whole lot of help with catchers. I know that we talked about how Jones has struggled. And I mean, Sterling Shepard was not particularly bad either, but Slayton didn't really do a lot. It just wasn't a great year on that end. And then again, edge rusher, as I mentioned, that was a problem too. So that's kind of your issues.
Yeah, this team outperformed their roster. And I know the tune of 6-10 doesn't really seem like they're outperforming anything. Well, they outperformed the Cowboys and Eagles, but
anything is.
But that doesn't seem like a special sort of achievement, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. But this is a team that really, really overperformed and overaccomplished in terms of what their roster was, because this roster was terrible. And I don't think Daniel Jones is necessarily a good quarterback either. It just seems like every time he's on the field and every time he does something good, he comes back and does something really dumb. And maybe he'll take the Josh Allen leap. Maybe he'll become one of those quarterbacks that You know, I'm saying for so long, like not a good quarterback, not a good quarterback, not a good quarterback. And then they just take the next step. I don't think that's going to happen with Daniel Jones, but we'll certainly see with the addition of Kenny Golladay this offseason. That's adding a big weapon. We'll see if that was an overpayment or not. But much like the football team, this team won because of their defense and because they were disciplined and because they were feisty. And now they've got more talent on defense. They bring in Adoree Jackson to join Logan Ryan in that secondary. So I think this team is on the up and up, and they don't necessarily need Daniel Jones to be anything other than a game manager for them to make the playoffs, in my opinion. I think this is a team that's on the up and up, and they're going to keep getting better and better with every year, as long as Daniel Jones doesn't completely fall off the map. But you hit it right on the head. This offense was terrible at just about everything. Bottom 10 in the league in almost every category, except their top 10 in the league in interceptions. So good for you, Danny Dimes. But we got a couple Colt McCoy starting games in there too. Don't forget that. Those were rough.
And Colt McCoy was my childhood hero. Yeah, I never grew up any kind of fan of anything Texas. I know that you had a different experience with that. But and again, not being from Texas or anywhere near Texas at all, yet my dad vehemently disliked Texas for a long time. So I never was growing up with that.
I was the annoying Texas fan that randomly pops up at your school. If you're not from Texas, there's always, or I guess if you are from Texas, when you're not from Texas, there's always one annoying Texas fan in every like bubble, in every little like group,
you grew out of that
environment. And that was me. I was that annoying Texas fan, which was great in 1929.
Yes, the year 209.
Yeah, no, it was great in 2009, but it really, really sucked for the next about 6 years until I was converted.
Which it still sucks for those still choosing to live in Texas fantasy land. So I feel sorry for them being owned by TCU every year, which I actually had someone adamantly argue with me about how they don't, TCU does not own Texas currently because Texas has the winning streak on them. And then I showed them Clemson winning again 7 times in a row against Georgia Tech, 73-7 last game. And they said, well, Tech still owns Clemson because it's winning record overall. And I was like, it's none of that works, my friend, but all right. usually dominance is indeed dominance, which at least in terms of the draft looking ahead, we're going to see if they can get a dominant player out of this. So 2021 draft preview, 6 overall picks. First one is going to be the 11th overall, which is a very solid pick here. The second round 42nd pick, third round 76th. And best fits here, I think a wide receiver could go pretty good here. I think this could be a really solid place to target one. You also get a really good edge defender, cornerback, offensive line. Any of those four, I think, would be really, really good in this position. But the Giants have a lot of things to work with here. So it's all going to be who is going to be sitting around at 11 and who's going to get pushed down for them. Because I think that's going to be kind of what they're looking for. Because if a guy like Jaylen Waddle is still on the board, they're going to look for him. I don't know if Devonta Smith will fall that far, but if he does, I could very definitely see the Giants picking him up. If a guy like Landon Dickerson is lower on the interior offensive line, it's they'll be looking around. And then Zaven Collins or Jason Oa from Penn State, that could be maybe a potential second round pick. So they need help in these areas very desperately.
Well, I would actually look for them to maybe trade up in the second round, maybe if it's only a few picks. But there are a lot of O-line needy teams. That's why they're the worst teams in the league. A lot of O-line needy teams in the top 10 sitting ahead of the New York Giants. I don't think tackle makes sense for them first round. Tackle doesn't make sense overall. You take a high pick and Andrew Thomas last year, and then across from him, you're paying Nate Solder a ton of money. And if you didn't want to pay him that money, you would have cut him this offseason. So it seems like they're pretty solid at tackle. Like you said, I think second, third round, the Landon Dickerson's fit, I think, is phenomenal here. But because of the amount of O-line needy teams in the top 10, they may have to trade up in the second round in order to get him. But I don't think he'll be off the board in the first round for sure. Other than that, I think a playmaker makes a lot of sense here. Sterling Shepard is clearly not it. You bring in Kenny Golladay. I think a guy like Jalen Waddle makes a ton of sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
You got Kenny Golladay. Like Kenny Golladay is a big, powerful possession receiver. And then you can add Waddle on the other side, who can really take the top off the defense and also is a very, very clean runner with the ball in his hands. So I think that's where they go first round. I'm actually going to go with Waddle here. And of course, when we get to our mock draft, we'll get like our final predictions in.
And we can now move on to America's favorite team. How about them Cowboys? The Dallas Cowboys finishing third in the division, also at 6-10. And my goodness, if you told me preseason the Cowboys would finish below Washington and New York, I would have laughed. And no, they ended up finishing less than them, which I actually think was just as funny. So I ended up laughing either way. But yeah, it was pretty bad. For the Cowboys, their biggest moments in the season, which they actually did have some solid moments in here. They beat the Falcons in one of the dumbest endings ever to a football game, which I don't even need to get into, but that was the game that the Falcons had the onside kick where we watched the ball sit there and go to the Cowboys. So Cowboys are basically gifted that. Came through and won. They didn't get last place. They have a very solid roster anyway and still finished top 10 in passing yards. Worst moments, losing Dak Prescott to a torn ACL, which pretty much ruined their season, as well as losing both of their offensive tackles. Line finished 27th overall, which is very skewed because most of that was backups most of the season. And yeah, when Dak played, he was on another level. Dak Prescott's stats were crazy.
Dak was having an incredible, like, MVP type of year if they could have recovered on the in the win column, because they were 2-3 over those five games. But I would argue that that is not Dak's fault whatsoever, because if you look at Dak's stats, 68% completion percentage, 1,800 yards, 9 touchdowns, 4.1 touchdown percentage, which is pretty good, only 4 interceptions, and the yards per attempt. Yards per attempt were 8.4. Yards per catch, 12.3. This offense was humming along. And I'd argue that the offense really wasn't that bad with Andy Dalton at the helm. I mean, I know Andy Dalton certainly had his moments where he looked like Andy Dalton and what we kind of think of Andy Dalton. There were a lot of bad interceptions. There were some noodle arm throws for sure. He looked like an old, kind of washed up quarterback, but it wasn't that bad. He still had a 64% completion percentage. He was still able to toss 14 touchdowns, which is not, I mean, that's not an incredible number. And the yards don't exactly pop out. He was kind of check down Charlie. But overall, this team was still kind of middle of the league in offense. The problem came with the defense. This defense was atrocious, Jack. Atrocious.
Other point with the offense too. Andy Dalton looks a lot worse of a quarterback when his offensive line is completely injured and is 27th in the league. And that's very a point true. Too, that if he had a healthy O-line, he would have had a much better season and wouldn't have gotten nearly the amount of hate that he did. So that's a point people forget about, how much an offensive line influences a quarterback's play.
And what this was actually a point that I wanted to bring up. Dallas should address the offensive line this offseason. They should address the offensive line in the draft. They should spend one of their first three picks on an offensive lineman. I think that is well warranted. This offensive line cannot hold up in its current form. You got too many old guys, and I know offensive line is other than special teams guys, probably the position with the most longevity in the NFL. We see guys playing into their late 30s all the time. But at some point, you've got to give up on this group. You've got to shake it up a little bit. You can't just bank on this group being that good, really. Like, what are we? We're probably 7 years into this offensive line group.
Well, then I can, and I don't want to skip ahead too much, but just to point this in, that's why I really love Rashawn Slater for this group, because he's a very good guard, but he can be versatile as a tackle. And that's the thing is, you want to have a guy you can plug and play a little bit, because kind of unlike the Orlando Brown situation, because he's so specific, got to be left tackle. And if you can have a guy that can move a little bit with an offensive line that can shift week to week due to these injuries, that can be huge.
I'd push back a little bit. I think this is a great spot for like Tevin Jenkins in the second round. Maybe a guy like Alex Leatherwood. I think they're in a great spot to pick a lineman in the second round, and they're only one pick above the Giants, as we were talking about, so they may have to trade up a little bit, but the Cowboys certainly can find the ammunition to trade up if they need to. And this team has enough offensive playmakers, so yeah, if you're gonna go offensive line, I would wait to do it in the second or third round. But you've got to address defense. I think that's the first thing you've got to address. And that's why we have guys here like Patrick Surtain, like JC Horn. It's going to be whoever they have as the first cornerback off the board. They're probably going to be the first team to take a cornerback. And I would be shocked if they didn't take a cornerback here.
And even looking at the safer positions on here, I mean, we know that Dak is obviously going to be big on this team with his extension signed. I mean, I know that it's been a weird kind of time for that, but clearly is a very solid player. Also, wide receiver, running back, Cooper Gallup, still solid. And then running back, he was a little bit down this year. Zeke was not particularly great this season either, but it still was solid. Yeah, and again, I know that's why. Least safe positions, D-tackle was actually, the rush edges weren't too bad, kind of the inverse problem of the Giants. Edge rusher is not a pretty solid group, needs work at D tackle. Cornerback Diggs did improve a lot, but they still need a lot of help. And then safety Woods, again, isn't really terrible here, but the pass defense overall is horrifically bad. So they need to get that addressed. Overall, the draft preview, the Cowboys have one first round pick at 10th overall, just one spot ahead of the Giants. Second round pick in the 44th. Our second round of 44th overall pick, and third round half actually have two, which is the 75th and the 100th. So perhaps can get some good guys in on this spot as well. And with that, they also could look ahead for perhaps a cornerback could be good in here. Again, with the pass defense being as awful as it is, maybe they could go for a guy like Surtain. They could go for a guy like JC Horn. At number 10 pick, they should be available. So maybe something else to help out this pass defense, because I know that's probably the worst part.
A good fit here too. They're not in a good position. They're too high for Trayvon Merrick, and I don't think he's going to slide that far in the second round, but I think he would be a good fit here as well.
No, he won't. I think he's being a very high-value prospect, which we love to see that as a TCU guy being highly valued. And lastly, we have the current joke of the NFC East, which you never want to be last place of the NFC East. But somebody's got to do it. And this year, it was the former Super Bowl champions of only a few years ago, the Philadelphia Eagles. They were 4-11-1. They somehow tied a game. I know we barely have ties anymore, but the Eagles still pulled one off. Of course, finished last division, no playoffs. Best moments here, I'm going to go with Wentz is gone, is a pretty good one. I never really thought Wentz was the best option here. He never really did much. I think getting rid of him, they needed to. Hurts replacing him actually shows some promise, but obviously there's a lot of question marks there. The second best pass rush, this pass rush from the D-line is incredible, which actually that was a moment about the Cowboys I wanted to mention too that I didn't, is that we ragged on the offensive line for not being great when injured, but look at the D-lines they have to play against. That's the other thing, is these D-lines in the NFC East is probably the strongest overall position if you count all teams combined. What's the strongest position? I probably would say defensive line.
Yeah, and if you look at the Eagles probably, when they're healthy, have the best offensive line in the league. I mean, you look at Jason Peters on the left, Lane Johnson on the right. They got solid interior play. I think this is a top five offensive line in the league. They were just hurt last year. Johnson's out, you're going to have a really hard time running the ball because he's the best in the league at what he does.
Other point about this too, the Eagles are also negative $34 million in cap space, third lowest in the NFL. So that's another point too, that they don't have a lot of extra money to sign. I know we haven't really talked about a lot of money stuff with a lot of these teams, but that's just a big point with the Eagles, is that when you're 4-11-1 and negative $34 million in the cap, that's a really horrific combination. I know we talked about the Falcons a little bit, where they're 4-12 and not doing great money wise. Same kind of thing, where this team should be a lot better. But of course, both of those teams, and the Falcons and Eagles, are both off of being a playoff team a few years ago, so it's very different. They also have the most picks in the division for the draft. They have a whole lot in here, 11 overall, so it'll be a lot to go around. Worst moments is the season was a pretty complete disaster. They have the 20th best pass defense. You mentioned offensive line being very solid, but they were again very, very injured. Also, the end of the season, 1-7. 1-7 into the season, which was one of the worst in the entire league, as that would make sense. You can only do one game worse. So Eagles were just all over the place. And then you added in, of course, the Nate Sudfeld fiasco against the Giants, too.
Yeah, that was a rough one. I don't know where to start with this team. It's kind of a reset when you hire Nick Sirianni to come in for Doug Peterson, who just won a Super Bowl three seasons ago, as crazy as that sounds. But yeah, I really think a lot of the team's success came down to the fact that there were a lot of injuries on offense, and they never really got Miles Sanders going. Miles Sanders missed four games over the season. And when he was in, he was playing pretty well, but he only got about 13 carries a game, even though he's averaging 5 yards an attempt. So yeah, I think this team has a lot of directions that they could go, but they've needed weapons on offense for some time now. And honestly, it's time to see what you got with Jalen Hurts. Give him a year, give him one season. And if you can put the best offense around him and the best offensive line in front of him, I think that's going to give you the best chance at evaluating what you really have in Jalen Hurts as you go throughout the season. But of course, that depends on so many other things, which, like, who do they draft this year?
You're asking, like this past season? Like,
yeah, I'll restate.
I didn't know if that was a rhetorical question or not.
That wasn't a rhetorical question. It's going to depend on a lot of things. It's going to be dependent on, is Nick Sirianni a Freddie Kitchens, or is Nick Sirianni more like a Kevin Stefanski in Cleveland? There are so many variables and moving pieces. We don't really know what this team looks like, but they did make some solid additions on defense. And I think this team is going to be better next year. I just don't know if they're going to be good, especially in a division where every team looks like they're going to be better next year.
Yeah, and looking at their positions around here, their defensive line still is solid. Again, they have to get healthy. Tight end, Ertz is likely. Ertz is kind of in a weird spot and getting older, but Dallas Goedert is still a very solid replacement. And then, of course, a quarterback, like you were saying with Hurts, that's going to be their plan for this season. It's pretty much locked in. Least safe, wide receivers have been a disaster here forever. I know you talk about wide receivers in Philly. It's just been a very bad mix. Yeah, I mean, there are three guys that have left. I mean, Jalen Reagor, who didn't really have a great season, but he also was hurt a lot of it, so it's hard to say that. But he's basically one of the only lock starters. Even Greg Ward was still basically did nothing. Linebacker core was fairly weak on this team. Not really a lot going on here for them. They could use someone else. And then a cornerback, Darius Slay, who they signed a big deal, was a very clear starter and is obviously going to be in the secondary, but wasn't perhaps big. McLeod is also going to be back in there, but he tore his ACL in week 14, so I don't know if he's going to be fully back to go, because you know the ACL tears are really terrible, but we'll see where he can go. And then Jalen Mills left at safety. I'm pretty sure he's gone, so that makes things interesting. I also didn't know this, but Sudfeld is indeed gone. He's in San Francisco now. I don't know if you knew that, but Sudfeld is now by the 49ers, so I did not know that for today, but he's now gone. So looking at their draft overall, they have the first round 12th pick overall, which if you're wondering why that's lower than our other two teams talked about, is because they traded back with San Francisco, got some good picks out of that. That was in that whole thing with Miami too. They had a whole switch around. Second round 37th pick overall, third round 70th, and then third round 85th. That pick is from the Colts. So they got a lot of different options to work with here. And who are you thinking about are some good players that could be good targets for a team like the Eagles?
Well, I think first round, you go get one of the best playmakers on the board. And that's either going to be Devontae Smith or Jalen Waddle. I think Devontae Smith is a good fit here, but they may opt to go for a bigger receiver, or wait and put receiver off until the second round and go with a linebacker should Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoa come off or slide a little bit, or Micah Parsons. But I don't know if Micah Parsons is necessarily going to slide out of the top 10. But we'll really get into that during our mock draft special. I think this is a great spot for Chaz Surratt. They have the 70th overall pick. I think that's right around where Chaz Surratt is going to be picked. Yeah. I think Dylan Moses would be a good fit there as well. But yeah, this team needs linebackers. And there's a ton of talent in the mid rounds here with the linebacker talent in this draft.
I also wanted to add in here as well. I think they could use some cornerback here at some point in the draft, maybe like Asante Samuel type later. Interesting point of this draft as well is that the Cowboys, again, to recap this, Cowboys going 10th, Giants going 11th, Eagles going 12th. So that's that one difficult part about wide receiver you're saying. I just don't see it possible having Devonta Smith slip that down to them. I know we saw some interesting things with wide receivers last year with the whole Justin Jefferson, Jalen Reagor, all that stuff. So maybe we can see stuff slipping around. And I think it'd be interesting to see a very high pick picking a wide receiver two drafts in a row. But it'll be interesting to sort of see how that could frame around that. And lastly, we would then have division champion picks here. And I'm going to go with the Cowboys. I know it's usually difficult to go with them, but I just think if you have that team healthy and ready to go with the way they were playing earlier in the season, I get they weren't winning as much, but if you can have a defense that's fixed up a lot more and the way this offense has been going, I just don't think that any teams in this division can slow the offense down.
And I'm actually going to go with the curveball here. I'm going to go with the Washington football team because the Cowboys defense was so atrocious last year. I don't think they're going to get that much better this year. We'll see how the draft turns out. They didn't really address it much in free agency. And with an aging offensive line, I just don't know what the ceiling for the Cowboys really is unless Dak comes out and has an MVP type of performance, which he's certainly capable of. I'm not counting that out whatsoever. My first reaction was actually to go with the Cowboys here, but I'm going to go with the football team because I think they have the best defense in the division. The defense is only going to get better. And I actually have some faith in Taylor Heinicke that he can be better than Daniel Jones and Jalen Hurts enough for this team to pick up some wins behind a offensive line that played really, really solid last year behind a team with Terry McLaurin and Antonio Gibson that's going to get better next year, and with a defense that stood out last year and that's only, again, going to get much, much better as those guys grow and produce. I mean, we could see Chase Young be a top five pass rusher in the league this year. I wouldn't put that out of the question either. So I'm going to go with the football team here. I think they go two in a row.
Yeah, I think that is potentially possible because, again, that defense is so young and so solid, and they were clearly able to get it done this time. I just don't know how they're going to fix their biggest issue, which is quarterback, and saying that Heinicke can be that big over a season, I guess is possible. We saw in that playoff game was more impressive than any of us could have predicted. So if he ends up blowing up with the rest of the offense how it is, maybe this could actually be a really good team, but it's all going to depend on, I think, a lot of that. So that's all I got here for our seventh episode in our eight-part series of the NFL draft and NFL season previews, all the exit interview news from the NFC East here today. We only have the NFC West to go. That'll be our next and final episode here before, of course, our draft preview and our mock draft, which is always a lot of fun, all gearing up for the draft on April 29th, which even Goodell gets to hug the players now. I saw he is fully vaccinated. So even Roger Goodell can hug the players. So we're getting a little more back to normal. Things are starting to get a little better here. It's starting to go a pretty solid way. So we're excited to get more into NFL coverage.
Absolutely. And if that's all you got, Jack, that is all I got. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Blanket Coverage Podcast. We'll be back with one more exit interview before we get to our draft preview next week. We are pretty, pretty pumped to do that. I know I am, at least. I love the draft. The stuff gets me going. So once again, thank you so much for listening to the Blanket Coverage Podcast. For now, I'm Noah Parker.
And I'm Jack Wallace. Peace out, y'all.